Hello and welcome to Stepping Into Truth, the podcast where we have conversations about race, gender, and social justice. This is another conversation during a pandemic episode. And at this point, it sort of feels redundant to say that. I think many of us are caught somewhere between this is starting to feel disturbingly normal and when is this weirdness going to be over? I know I am. For me, part of normalcy are these opportunities to talk with other activists. And this conversation is one I've been looking forward to for a while. Today's guest is possessed of two of my favorite attributes in people. She's funny and she's smart. She's also found a way to turn the craft of cross-stitching into very direct ways of fueling activism. And if you think you know where this conversation is going, I'm going to bet you don't. My guest today, Shannon Downey, better known as Badass Cross Stitch, is a community organizer disguised as a fiber artist and craftivist. She blends her politics, activism, and art into projects that are designed to inspire others to take action, think, discuss, engage with democracy and their community, and find some digital analog balance. It is my great pleasure to welcome Shannon Downey to the podcast. Shannon, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here.
So I'm going to start with a really hard question. How are you?
Isn't it funny that that is actually the hardest question to answer right now?
It really is.
I am doing pretty darn good. I know that I'm pretty good at being alone. I really enjoy my own company. I think I'm really funny. So I've been cracking myself up for weeks.
I think I'm really funny too. And it really pisses me off when people don't say that is like the first thing about me. It's like, oh, she's so funny. If they don't say that, I think you don't know me.
Right? It's so rude. but you know, my dogs don't think I'm as funny as I think I am. So it's a tough crowd over here.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm healthy. I'm safe. I have a space to live in and food to eat. So like, I just keep trying to keep perspective on the privilege that I have and just focus on that. Like we're keeping each other safe right now. And it's really a beautiful solidarity moment that we're seeing on such a profound level. So that's where I'm trying to live right now.
That's so true. It makes me think of the time in New York right after September 11th and how New Yorkers just pulled together in the most remarkable way. And I remember even then thinking, is this going to last? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe there's an opportunity here for it to be more of a change maker.
I think that's the whole world in this one. You know what I mean?
Like, exactly.
I feel like this is a real moment. It's funny that you bring up 9/11. I continue my therapy and I was on Zoom and my therapist is like, how are you doing? And I'm like, you know, I feel like I'm primed for this. You know, I lived through 9/11 running for my life on Manhattan. And then I had dengue fever where I was alone in my house for 2 weeks with 105 degree fever, like certain I was going to die. And I'm like, you know, this just feels like I'm just at home, you know?
Yep.
You know, like, I don't know. Those were really scary for me. And now this is like, oh, I can stay home and protect myself and protect others. So I don't know. That feels a lot less terrifying than some of the things I've lived through.
Yeah, it's definitely a different experience of feeling like we have some control over this circumstance, which was not the case on September 11th, and certainly not the case with dengue fever, which mercifully I've never had.
Yeah, it's really unpleasant.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like coronavirus, only, you know, not so well publicized.
Yeah, it's a fascinating disease, especially because millions of people die from it every year, but it's always developing nations. So, of course, there's not an emphasis on it. There's not a ton of funding around finding a vaccine for it because there's no treatment for it. So it's an interesting disease to have experienced and then sort of came back to the US and been like dengue fever. And everyone's like, I've never heard of it. And I'm like,
right.
Oh,
Right. Exactly.
Like, it's bad. Look it up. Look
yeah,
it up.
You
it's
don't really want bad. It. You definitely don't want this.
Its nickname is Bone Break Fever. So check it out.
Okay, so I didn't know that, and that's pretty horrifying. Maybe we'll just leave that there.
Yes.
So things are really different from when I first invited you to be on the podcast, which was about, I think, about 2 months ago. So, you know, 2 months ago, we were all out doing our lives and doing the things that we were doing. And I know that this is something that is really highlighting the fractures of our society. And you've spoken about this, you've written about this, and I would love for you to talk about some of the things that you are witnessing in regard to how this is just showing us where we really are.
I guess for me, I'm like waving my hand around at all this, being like, see, this is what I've been talking about. Do you see it now? In a lot of scenarios, I've had people call me and be like, I can't believe this is happening. And I'm like, why? What about this can you not believe? We are built on white supremacy. We're built on capitalism. We are built on patriarchy. And, you know, it's just been evolving to extremes in all of those ways, in particular over the last 4 years. This is a moment where it's on full display if you're willing to just look. But don't come at me surprised about this, because this is not surprising. This is just sort of exactly what all of the activists sort of have been talking about, is like, hey, y'all, but suddenly it's on full display. Everything from inaccess to healthcare to that, the fact that our jobs, our healthcare is tied to our jobs. I can't believe that it took this to get people to be like, oh, wait a minute, maybe that's not such a good idea.
Right.
I'm just like, oh, okay, well, you're here now, so welcome.
Yes.
Like, and now how do we change everything, right? And I feel like this is such a moment where we can be like, okay, just take a minute, look at everything that's going on. Here are the 10 biggest things that we can do to rewrite all of this. What are you willing to give up? What are you willing to do in order to rewrite all of this?
I think that's the real challenge is, first, well, there are a couple of challenges in there. First is really getting people to understand that what they're seeing is not new, and it is totally intentional.
Yep.
That this system was created to support a specific way of life that works for a tiny percentage of people and leaves the rest of us just in the dust. You know, so when I hear people say things like wash your hands, I think, what about the people in Flint, Michigan? Are they supposed mm-hmm. to be washing their hands in toxic water? How are they supposed to even be taking care of themselves when we haven't addressed this basic, basic problem that's been there for years?
Years.
Years.
Yeah. And like that one in particular is so egregious. It's like, no, look.
Yeah.
Years.
And it's water. Yeah. Water is not optional.
Seriously.
So, yeah, I think it's really going to be interesting. And I do wonder whether we're going to be able to sustain this. I mean, I agree. I think we should all basically get a piece of paper out, write down the 10 things that bother us the most, and decide which one of those things we're going to personally attack, which one of those problems we're going to make a difference in. And I think people get stuck on the idea of they have to make this enormous difference rather than just making a difference, even if it's for one person or two people, that actually has impact.
Yeah. I think it becomes really overwhelming really quickly, including for those of us that live in the activism space. You know, all of these issues are interrelated. And so you start getting, you know, you're digging into one, but you see the correlation between, you know, 20 others. And so then you're sort of like, well, how do I undo that? But also keep working on the thing that I'm working on. You know, like it becomes a web that I think can quickly cause folks to just sort of spiral into despair around, well, all of this is too much and it's all correlated. So how do I possibly have impact?
I think that's really true. And I think it's both true and it's an excuse.
Yes.
And what we have to do, those of us with the privilege to do things, is just say, okay, I'm going to hold both those things and I'm going to keep moving. I'm not going to let the overwhelm stop me. I'm just going to put that aside and rest assured that it will still be there tomorrow and the next day. And I'm going to do this one thing today and just break it down really simple and just do one thing, do the next thing that is in front of you to do. And just keep moving, because part of the way the system sustains itself is by overwhelm. I mean, yeah. When he who shall not be named got elected, one of the things I said for early on was pick one thing, because they're going to throw everything at us and that will make us just get into a state of paralysis. So pick one thing. And it's one of the rare times in life I've been completely right. It's deeply disturbing, but you know, so I'm still there. I'm still in the pick one thing, do the one thing that you can do.
And we'll trust see. That everyone is going to pick one thing and they're not all going to be the same thing. And exactly. So there's the hope that then everybody doing their things, you know, and we find ways to work together and support each other. But as long as we keep it moving, eventually we will win.
Yes.
We have the numbers.
We have the numbers. And that actually leads me into your thing, because your thing is really interesting.
I can't. I'm like, what's my thing? Tell me.
Let me tell you what it is.
Great.
It's badass cross stitch.
Oh, okay.
And that is the coolest name for something and such a really fun and yet impactful project. And I would like you to talk about that, because, you know, I come from a theater background, so I have this very strong connection to things creative. Mm-hmm. And when I came across your work, I was like, oh, that's really cool. I like the name, but B, I love the idea. So talk about Thanks. That and how you use your particular craft to make a difference.
Sure. You know, I started it sort of selfishly like 8 years ago, and it was just a matter. I was running a digital marketing company for 10 years. I was connected to a device 24/7. I was cranky. I had no good ideas. It had just been months since I had a creative idea. And I was like, what is wrong with me? Do I just not want to run this company anymore? And I realized, I think I'm just burnt out of being connected all the time. I'm somebody who loves to be outdoors and disconnected and kayaking. And like, I just can't do it when I'm forced to be connected on behalf of clients for my livelihood all the time. But to our earlier, you know, sort of point about do one thing, I was sort of like, what can I do today to feel better? And so I went on Etsy, as one does, and which is the perfect solution to digital burnout, go on Etsy. But I came across this cross-stitch pattern of Captain Picard from Star Trek, who is my hero. And I just laughed for like 5 minutes because I was like, what a funny use of the medium of cross stitch, because I learned how to cross stitch in fifth grade. I made a pink bunny. I thought, this is the stupidest thing I've ever done. I'm never doing it again. And I realize now that it wasn't the medium, it wasn't the art form, it was the content, right? Mm-hmm. And I was immediately turned off to the content because I did not jive with pink bunnies.
Understandably.
You're right. It's like, come on, fifth grade lesbian Shannon, not so into the pink bunny situation. So I saw this and I was like, well, I love Captain Picard and that's funny and I know how to do that and that's analog. So let me buy this pattern and stitch this thing. And I did. And the next day, I didn't pick up my phone for like 3 hours. I didn't even notice. And that's kind of the key element of this medium, is like, you are using your hands in the exact same way that you use a phone. So you don't have that compulsion to keep checking your phone while you're working, because your hands are using the materials and behaving in the same way that they would if you were on your phone. And so I realized this correlation and I was like, well, that's really interesting because I'm not fiending for my device right now. And so I started stitching every day just as a way of, you know, creating some digital analog balance for myself. And then I started to like feel good and have good ideas. And I was like creative again. And then very quickly it transitioned out of, you know, making other people's patterns and just making like funny things to amuse myself to creating space to substantively think about things that were on my mind and almost create a space of meditation around those topics. And so all of that was around, you know, issues of social injustice and sort of the work that I was doing. And so I started stitching guns as I, you know, created space to think about gun violence. And I started to stitch, you know, feminist messages and messages around white supremacy. And if trans folks have been murdered, you know, I was stitching their names so that I could reflect on that. And so I started to share these things on Instagram and really started to find a beautiful community of folks who were like, oh man, these are the topics that are on my mind, but this is such a weird and interesting way to come across them and have a conversation around them. And so I think the medium itself is really key because it stops people in their tracks when they're scrolling through all of these social platforms, because they're really expecting, you know, home sweet home and Bible verses on the cross stitch and embroidery side of things. And then it's like, fuck the man. And they're like, wait, what? This is super confusing. So, you know, you put these things out there and people stop. And really for me, the art is to get people to stop, to read what I've written and engage with that. And so I've just built this gorgeous community of people who are so willing to engage in these really challenging things and consider these really challenging topics that some folks have just never considered before because they're connecting with it in such a unexpected way. And then, you know, because the medium is a gorgeous medium, but now the content has been flipped, folks are like, wait, this is kind of cool. I want to do this. And so then I started giving workshops. I can teach you how to do this in 10 minutes. And so then we started creating these communal spaces where we're stitching, I'm teaching you how to stitch, but then we can move beyond that and we can have these conversations in real life. And we're having them in spaces and with groups of folks that have never spoken about these things out loud. They've never considered their white privilege, or they've never felt comfortable to even explore that topic out loud, for fear of saying something wrong or, you know, offending somebody. But because we're doing it in these safe spaces that I work really hard to create a safe space, and they're doing something with their hands that they can sort of like come in and out of conversations as they feel brave enough to, it really has created these beautiful in real life micro communities of people who are willing to say, no, we're going to talk about this. And this is the actions that we're going to take to create change around these things. So it's been really fun.
I have to say, it sounds amazing. I am a knitter.
And oh, yay.
Yeah. I mean, the only problem right now is I don't have enough supplies.
You know, it's like, oh no, I could drop off a box of them for you.
Oh, I trust me, I'm going to take you up on that because okay, I got good. Stuck. I got stuck and didn't really think about it. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, and here's lockdown. I'm like, oh God. Cause it, you know, it's sort of the end of the heavy knitting season for me.
Yeah.
But now I'm kind of desperate. So yeah, thank you.
I will totally drive a whole box down to you and drop them off.
And you are now my best friend. Thank you so much.
Great. We'll coordinate that after this.
We will. But one of the things that I know from knitting and knitting in community, and I think is the same for cross stitching or any craft, is that just having the space to not have to make eye contact with someone mm-hmm. while you're talking about a challenging thing creates such a possibility, because you can look down at what you're doing and say what you have to say without having the immediate input of that person's physical response mm-hmm. right there.
Exactly.
And that makes all the difference in the world. Because
it really does. And I think that people underestimate, you know, I've had some people be like, I'm sorry, you get together and stitch and talk about white supremacy. I don't understand. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. Come and be part of this, because the shit is magic. Yeah. It is the perfect, you can create the perfect environment for facilitating. And I have to do very little facilitating, to be honest. I'm fully prepared to facilitate the shit out of this. I don't have to, because folks are so, they're set. It's been structured in such a way where they feel safe, where they feel like they've connected with each other before we even start these conversations. They've learned something new together, right? So they all came in at a level where they didn't know how to do something. And they all just were open enough to get schooled in something new. And so they're all beginners at it and they're all trying it and sort of comparing and trying to help each other. And then they can move into these really challenging conversations where they don't have to look at each other, but they can if they want, right? Where they can pull away from the conversation if they start to feel overwhelmed by it and or bring it to the hard, you know, like, I'm stitching now, let me ask you this question about stitching to create a little space.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can dip back into what we're talking about. It's just fascinating. And so all of these people, there has never been a workshop that I've been to where I watch people exchange phone numbers at the end of it. But every single workshop, people are like, hey, can we get like an email list? Can we just get everybody's phone numbers? Like, we'd love to do this regularly. And then they don't need me anymore. They like get together regularly to stitch and like continue these conversations. And it's so powerful to watch. And I feel like I'm really tricking people into doing some stuff here.
Okay. So I'm going to disagree. I don't think you're actually tricking them. I think that, you know,
I'm like, come learn embroidery. Let me teach you this like, little
thing. Let me teach you how to be subversive. Right?
And then I'm like, so white supremacy, let's do this.
It's such a perfect way though, because we need to be having these conversations.
Yeah.
And we need to figure out a way for people who have never had these conversations to participate in them. I am absolutely someone who believes that policy change is the thing that you are going for first and foremost. But I'm also someone who believes that the way you get to policy change is by numbers. Mm-hmm. And if people aren't talking amongst themselves and in their communities, you won't get to those numbers. You need a critical mass. So I think it's a both and. You want the policy change and you want people having these conversations and understanding what's going on and starting to deconstruct some of the ideas that are so embedded in our society that we often don't even look at them. They're just there like the air.
Yeah. I was saying to somebody the other day, I think it was a high school teacher who said something about like, well, maybe capitalism isn't working. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like never in my life up until that moment did I even understand that capitalism was a system that had been created that could be uncreated, that was built. And I was just like, what? This is just how we do. This is how money gets passed back and forth. This is how you get a job and this is the thing. And so I remember the impact of that one seed, that one sentence that blew my mind open and changed everything. And like, that's why I do these stitch ups. Cause I'm like, yeah, but if somebody in there just says one thing that can blow somebody's mind open, it can totally transform how they think about everything. And so I have seen that happen, and I've seen it on the micro level and I've seen it on the macro level, and it is so fascinating to me. And so, I mean, it gets me fired up every time. I live to do these things.
Yeah. I mean, first off, I can tell, and it's, and it's really exciting. It's really exciting.
I have had no coffee today either. Like, this is just how amped I get when I think about the impact that this has and can continue to have and how much I love it.
Well, I think that's perfect because honestly, this is what we need right now. And I know that, you know, we're stuck in our homes, and for some people that means they have more time. For other people, it means they have less time. If yes. You have kids, or even if you don't, some jobs are actually harder to do remotely, and you're totally spending more time doing your job than you would if you were going into the office. But that being said, this is still a time where people are getting to think in a different way, partly because when we're not engaging with the same numbers of people and the same people all mm-hmm. the time, we get to hear ourselves a bit differently. And we get to hear things that are said and explore them a little bit differently than when we're always in community, physical community. So I think it's an opportunity for people to really start to see things that aren't working. I mean, when you know, here in Chicago, one of the reasons they didn't close the school sooner than they did was because they were trying to figure out how to get food to the students who depend on those meals.
Yeah.
And until they got that sorted, they didn't close the schools. Mm-hmm. And that is even a problem, that there are even those children in our country, and so many of them, who depend on school for their meals.
Yeah.
You know, that's something to think
about. Yeah, it's devastating. I taught in a public school for many years, and I taught first grade in Paterson, New Jersey, and 100% of my students relied on school meals for their, you know, for their food. But the shit that we fed them, that we as a country feed these young people,
it's terrible.
Absolutely atrocious and appalling, right? So you're going to an underserviced school. Seriously, when I taught there, there was an asbestos situation at a nearby school, and they cut our school day in half. So my first graders went to school from, like, you know, 7 a.m. to noon, and then we left. And the other school came in and went to school from noon to six for an entire half a year. So my students were getting half the education. They are getting fed absolute garbage. They do not have access to anything. They literally don't have access to anything. And now, you know, we're pointing and saying, like, well, Black and brown people are dying from COVID because, you know, they have pre-existing conditions. Well, why the fuck do they have pre-existing conditions? Look at this. You know what I mean? Like, look at Pilsen right now, where they blew up that smokestack in our little village and have polluted the air during a lung-driven, you know, a breathing-driven pandemic. It's bananas that this is happening, and that these are the conclusions that folks are coming to. Well, they have pre-existing conditions, so they're more likely to get COVID. Like, yeah, look at what we've done as a society to create the situation that led to that, that led to this, that led to this. Like, you have to follow, you have to trace it back. And folks aren't doing that as successfully as I wish they would right now.
Well, I think that part of it is that, truthfully, people don't want to. People don't want to actually look at why those things are true. Because if you look at why those things are true, the only conclusion you can come to is that there is systemic racism in our society, and we have done almost nothing to really address it in any meaningful way. I mean, if you're feeding children crap from first grade on, then yes, they're going to be overweight, they're going to have high blood pressure, they're going to have all of these things that then put them at higher risk of dying in a circumstance like the one we're in right now. But, you know, Paterson, New Jersey is a really poor community. And so, of course, 100% of your kids needed to be fed at school. Mm-hmm. That's not a surprise. The surprise is that nothing has really changed in the time since you were there.
Seriously, so long ago.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not that old. It wasn't so long ago. I'm not trying to make myself older than I am. I was so young then.
You were fresh out of high school. Yeah, yes. That's it. Got it. No worries.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So something I saw on Twitter, you had a whole thing. No, it's okay. You had a whole bunch of stickers that you've designed, and one of them I particularly loved, and it said, "Weird times call for weird solutions."
That is my motto right now.
I loved it. I was like, yes, these are weird times. So I'm kind of curious about some of your weird solutions.
Oh, this is great. Allow me. Well, one, I always said, like, I will never do this work online because the magic happens in the room. And then I was like, psych, I'm totally going to do this online. And I started by just saying, okay, we're going to do a social gathering. So we'll do a stitch up, which is just a word I invented. And it's basically stitching together in community. And I was like, but we'll do it via Zoom. And anybody is welcome. We'll keep it to 20 people. You Zoom in, we'll talk to each other, we'll get to know each other. The idea is that everybody's working on a project. We're going to share the projects out, and we are not going to talk about COVID or the pandemic or anything. This is an hour and a half of escapism. And it has been nothing short of a tiny miracle, because we are getting people from all over the world, which is so cool, because how often do you get to meet new people while you're locked in your house? You know, like, it doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't.
So, and it's neat to be able to hear from people around the world, what they're up to, how they're handling this, you know, what their tips and tricks are, but also, you know, their perceptions of the US. And so we've had so much fun with these, but then all these people were like, but I have the time now and I'd really like to learn how to stitch. And I'm like, I do not know if I can teach this workshop with the setup that I have here, but let me figure it out. And so I've designed this ridiculous hacked up situation here, but I've now led 3 workshops and I'm like, I can totally do this online. How fun is this? So I'm like, all right, we've got about like 40 new stitchers out in the world just in the past couple weeks. And so I started hosting these, like a workshop every Saturday and a stitch up every Sunday. I realize I can't do more than that because it's too much computer time. But all of that has been, I mean, I just like have so much fun with it that it gets me through the week.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I'm buying an RV and moving into it. And I am giving up my job in my apartment, my jobs, I should say. I am the director of development for Asian Americans Advancing Justice Chicago, and I teach at Columbia. And so, you know, I gave them my notice like 8 months ago. And so I'm going to, at the end of June, downsize to 300 square feet, move into an RV with my dogs, and we're hitting the road. And I'm going to just keep doing this until I can't anymore, or until I've taught everyone in the whole freaking country how to stitch and talk about white supremacy, one or the other.
I love that. I mean,
it feels like that. The perfectly weird solution to the chaos that is right now. And so, you know, if this is the one thing I can do, right? Like when we were talking about our one thing, this feels like it encompasses so many things, but it is the thing that gets me out of bed in the morning, that gets me excited, that makes me feel like I am actually having impact and significant change on the micro and the macro level, and that I can force, you know, these conversations and invite people to get uncomfortable and create a space where they're willing and brave enough to do it, and then see what comes of that.
That's such a cool thing. So you're just going to get in an RV.
Yep.
With your dogs.
Uh-huh.
And hit the road.
Yep.
And just see where it takes you.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, I've got some things lined up and I've got some, I have some for real artichokes. So that'll be happening. And so I'm hoping to go pop into all of those and see those and be there for that. But yeah, you know, I'm going to go talk to people and make art and see what we can, what impact we can have in this world and in this country in particular right now, especially leading up to the election. And here we are during the census, and like, there's so much happening that we should be calling attention to. And so this is how I'm going to do it.
I love it. It sounds it sounds kind of cool, but it also sounds like you have an opportunity to really make a difference here and to spark conversations that otherwise would not happen. And that feels incredibly important to me right now. It just feels like, yeah, that's the thing we really, really need to be doing, is talking to one another and talking about what is true and what isn't true. And we're at this moment in time where we have this choice to make that's really quite stark. And you did a cross stitch that laid it out perfectly. And it's the one that said, let this radicalize you.
Yeah.
And that's exactly it.
Yeah. I mean, Marian Kaba, that, you know, those are her words. And I'm such a, like, I'm so inspired by her as an activist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that particular quote ends with, "and not towards despair." And that, it's so much what I believe in. I really feel like I have to be on the road talking to people, because this is the this is such a tipping point. And I knew I had to be on the road before, because, you know, I've been planning this for like 8 months, right? But when this happened, at first I was devastated, because I was like, oh my God, everything that I had lined up to fund this in March, April, May, and June just got canceled. Like, mm-hmm. I just lost $35,000 of funding that I can't believe that I just lost because I was hustling so hard. And so there was a, you know, days of just like mourning that and just being like, shit, what am I going to do? And then I realized, like, ugh, I've let capitalism train me, you know, like, mm-hmm. like that, you know, that's part of that capitalist training that we have. And I'm like, no, whatever, I'll figure it out. I always figure it out. This is reorienting me back towards my mission. It's just reinforcing that this is the moment, that this absolutely has to happen now. And that this is the tipping point. And this is when people are the most vulnerable to new ideas, right? They're the most open to, because they have to be right now, right? Because yes. We're all just sort of like, what's going to happen? And the fact that we don't know is terrifying, but it's also really exciting, because it's like, yeah, let's decide what's going to happen next, not just like wait around and see. We can take action now to start creating the new after that we actually want, versus just, well, when's it going to go back to normal? Like, normal sucked. Normal wasn't working for like 90% of our population. So why not? And like, we're seeing that how bad it's not working now. So now is the moment to start re-envisioning what could be and how we can create change. And so I have to be out there. I have to go talk to people and make them talk to me.
I love this, because one of the things I've been talking with my friends about a lot since this started is, what are we going to look like on the other side? Because what we looked like coming into this clearly is not working, and we can choose to do it differently, but we need to start being intentional about it and really thinking about it and really confronting what has worked and what hasn't worked in our society, and paying attention and making choices from a place of, this is what I want to see in the world, rather than, oh, well, you know, this is what's easy, because this isn't going to be easy. Mm. None of this is going to be easy, but it can be so rich and so much better.
Yeah.
Better wouldn't be hard. It's a pretty low
seriously.
Bar.
That's the bars on the floor for that one. But
pretty
yes.
much, pretty much.
But what's scary is it could be worse.
It could definitely be worse.
And the bar's already on the floor. So
yeah. And I think that a not insignificant number of people are actually starting to perceive that it could be worse. Mm-hmm. And it's why I think people are reluctant to just go back to normal. You know, common sense says, don't do that. You know, just common sense says that, that way lies death and destruction, literally death and destruction.
Yeah.
Even despite what any people in power might be saying. And so pushing that conversation and encouraging that and making space for that feels really important now. So thank you very much. I really am grateful that you're going to be hitting the road and doing this thing.
Hey, thanks.
So we only have a couple of minutes left, and I have a couple of things I want to ask you. So my first thing that I don't want to let you out of here without finding out is, so what surprised you about this pandemic time?
What surprised me? How interesting it is to see people suddenly understand how important local politics are, and to see how I feel super blessed right now to be living in Chicago and Illinois right now, between the mayor and the governor, which, like, that is not an easy thing for me to say. I did not vote for our governor. I was not feeling super positive about a billionaire white man, you know, leading our state. And I am so glad that I was wrong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am terrified for the states that are not
so lucky as we are, but I just think that this is a moment where people are seeing like, oh yeah, in a moment like this, in particular,
when we have the president that we have, and, you know, we're starting to see the importance of our local leaders, it is my hope that people are going to sort of really internalize that. And then my hope is then that it leads to, like, you know, a much higher engagement in local politics and in local elections and in that sort of like micro government, because it's so clearly wildly important in particular right now. And I think it's just demonstrating something that the activist community has been saying forever, you know, like, no, local politics, this matters. Aldermen matter. This all impacts your life on such a profound level.
So true. It is so true. I mean, I got here from Georgia. Can't tell you how grateful I am to not be in Georgia right now, mm-hmm. where the governor has completely lost his mind, as far as I can tell. Yeah. I mean, you know, this is a difficult enough time under the best of circumstances, and having leadership that is abdicating its responsibility just exacerbates that. And I am deeply grateful to be in Illinois, where, as you say, the governor and the mayor of Chicago are doing a really good job in a really hard time.
Agreed.
And putting their citizens first. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's, yeah. It shouldn't have to be said, you know, that should be the default, but here we are.
Here we are.
So the last thing I want to ask you is if you can give us just three simple things that any of us can do to make a difference if we're inspired by the work that you're doing. So what are three things we can do that would help advance your work and also give us the benefit of what you're doing?
Well, come to one of my workshops or stitch ups online or in person. And they're currently just pay what you can and show up and let's do this thing. So that's one thing. Fill out your census. That has nothing to do with me, but it matters so much and it's so easy. And like the numbers are really bad right now. And that's super scary for me because I feel like this is another part of the system that really could screw everyone over for 10 whole years. So fill out that census and make sure everyone you know is filling out that census. And then, you know, you can always support my tour by buying my art, buying some. If you donate, you get stickers and they're super fun. Weird times call for weird solutions is one of them. So, so you know, there's a million ways. And even just like, hey, Shannon, when you come through Savannah, let's hook up a workshop. Let's hook up a stitch up. Come speak at my library. All of that. Like that's how I'm getting through this. And that's how being invited into community is paramount in order for this to work. So anybody who wants to invite me over, know that I'm actually coming and I'm showing up in an RV with two dogs and I would really like some baked goods because I'm not going to have an oven. So that's it.
That's excellent. Well, I will just say that I did the census online yesterday and it took me maybe 3 minutes.
Yep.
It was super easy. And I must confess, I felt quite proud of myself afterwards. It's like, oh, look at you. What a good human you are.
So. You should have. You pat yourself on the back, do a little dance. You did
Civic
duty.
Civic duty and it took 3 minutes. So yeah, everyone do the census. It will determine how much money goes to your kids' schools, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm, pay
seriously.
Attention to these things. Well, this has been such a joy. Thank you so much for talking with me. I can't even tell you how happy I am we finally got this conversation in.
Me too. This was great. And I'm gonna swing by with some yarn for you.
That sounds excellent. And on the road, we're going to keep track of you and I will be updating my listeners with how you're doing and where you are. So
thank you
so much.
My pleasure.
And thank you for listening. As we all figure out how to navigate this surreal time, I hope that this episode brought some joy into your day. It's weird living in this limbo. We know we need to be here, but we're ready to be out of it, but we don't know what out of it will look like. As Shannon reminded us, weird times call for weird solutions. Let's see what we can come up with as we look to create a better world on the other side of all of this. In the meantime, stay healthy and be kind to others and yourself. Again, thanks for listening, and I'll be back with another episode very soon.